Hello and welcome to the Pirates Fan Forum here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. I'm your host, Gary Morgan. With me, as always, my good friend, Jim Stamm. How you doing, brother?
Good, man. Other than the weather, I can't really complain. The Pirates are playing pretty well, and my house isn't underwater yet, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of people. James Littleton got hit pretty hard, actually.
Basically, oh, did he?
Got flooded real bad, yeah, so... Shout out to everybody who got flood damage. Hope it's okay. Also, our next guest didn't bring it north with him. It came before he did. He just arrived up here in the Pittsburgh area. You know him from Locked On Pirates, and most of you that watch this show have probably seen me on there every other Monday or every Monday or whenever he decides to have me on every week.
Yeah.
So, Ethan Smith, welcome to the show, brother. Glad you could make it happen.
Yeah, of course. And as I told Gary before we started recording, I stepped out of the airport and that cold air just hit me and it just felt great. Just felt wonderful, you know, after being in the 70s for the last couple weeks. You know, everybody's like, oh, yeah, he's mentioning the 70 degree weather. Yeah, I know we wish we could flip places, but sometimes that cold weather hits you and it just feels different.
No, I feel you, man. I was only in Florida for like about a week and I was ready to come back to my natural habitat, you know. Yeah. I don't feel right down there, you know. I like wearing hoodies, man. Even when it's like kind of warmish, I'd rather wear a hoodie. But anyways, I thought let's start out with something a little different. Derek Shelton got ejected the other day, right? And it was very much so a choice of him or Brian. You know, he came out on the field so that he could get thrown out instead of Brian because he was gonna have his say one way or another about that check swing, right? And it's not really about whether it was right or wrong, but it was Derek Shelton came out on Twitter, something I haven't seen before, really. A chorus of people loving on Derek Shelton for coming out and getting ejected, right? I think like maybe having more of the right buttons to push has got some people maybe thinking twice about their immediate hatred of Derek Shelton. What do you think, Jim? I mean, it's not enough time for it to really change, but it's hard to criticize his decisions when they're all working.
Look, this has been the thing the whole time with Derek Shelton.
Sure.
How could you know really anything about Derek Shelton as a manager? You know, I mean, how many different analogies have we used over the years with, you know, if you want to go buy ingredients at the dollar store and come up with a, you know, a 5-star meal, fantastic, but it typically doesn't happen that way. So, you know,
Hormel chili and mac and cheese is all I can think of.
So, yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, so look, managers tend to look better when they have better players. And that's, I really hate to oversimplify that. Yes, they have important in-game decisions to make. But when you don't have much to pick from in those games, what exactly are you judging him on? So, you know, now, look, if they don't start performing better throughout a year now, have at it.
Sure.
But we're just getting a look at what he might look like as a manager.
Yeah, and Ethan, I would say, you know, the lineups early against all those lefties, I'd say he took some pretty big bets, things we didn't even see them experiment with in spring. Like, I didn't think for one second they were going to drop Cruz down to like 6 or 7 in the lineup. I didn't think for one second they were going to just sit Jack Sawinski, you know, for a couple games here and there. So even those types of decisions are working out. We talk about pushing the buttons and maybe it's easier because the talent's better. But he's shuffling the deck and it's working. I mean, what are you seeing?
Well, I mean, even mentioning too, Connor Joe leading off. Like, I mean, you push Cruz down the lineup and you have Connor Joe lead off. And honestly, not having Connor Joe in the lineup, Gary, yesterday kind of felt weird for the first time this year.
I agree.
It felt like it was like, oh, why isn't Connor Joe in this lineup today? You look at him bringing in Edward Olivares on opening day when they were down 5-2. And that home run, and I've said it on my show a couple times, really kind of changed the whole scope of that game. And that was a decision that he had to make on the fly. And also his decisions with really forcing the opposing bullpen to have to throw a lefty against O'Neill Cruz and have to throw all these bullpen arms against these guys, I think has been interesting as well. But yeah, there's been some decisions where if you're the casual fan, you're probably wondering, yeah, why in the world is O'Neill Cruz batting seventh? But then it's working. So why stop if it's not work? Like if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Really?
He's doing right now.
I mean, Jim, yeah. I'm glad this subject came up because we hadn't really had a chance to talk. You had before the season kind of bought in when we did our lineups earlier in the year. You had bought in really on the analytics of having O'Neill Cruz bat first. And I mean, I'm not going to say like I changed my mind because of listening to you there, but I've bought it. And it certainly added to my evidence for why I thought I'd see it and be okay with it. I can't believe he didn't do it. I mean, what do you think we're seeing here? I mean, it seems like a fear of them facing lefties, but he's the only one they're consistently forcing to do it.
Yeah, I think in other years, they would have left them there. But again, when you have other options to, you know, switch it up and you don't feel like you're going to lose anything on the other side of it, then why not explore it? And look, O'Neill Cruz is somebody that he's still a baby in terms of his, you know, major league at bats. So like, this is not something that I would foresee as his career goes on. If he shows he's able to do it, then I don't know that they'll mess with it, but they've got options. And the other thing I wanted to bring up in this whole conversation was, you know, what we love to do on social media is people like to post these god awful lineups from like the last 3-4 years where it's like Wilmer Defoe and Josh Van Meter. And so, and they're truly awful. If we are acknowledging how awful those are, then isn't that alone saying something about what he's had to work with? So, you know, and some of them are terrible, terrible lineups.
Yeah. Ethan, what do you think of that? I think that's probably the most reasonable explanation. I'm actually kind of proud of Pirates fans who are giving him a shot this year and kind of not allowing all of what he had to work with to taint that entirely for them. There's people that are going to hate him no matter what.
But... Well, yeah, and that's just going to be with any manager. I mean, there's people that hate Dave Roberts in LA for multiple reasons. There's people that hate probably every Brian Snicker in Atlanta for multiple reasons. Everybody's going to always have it. Like, you're always going to have that crowd of people that are going to hate them no matter what. But I feel like it's a direct correlation. The better your talent is, the better opportunity you have to actually showcase your job. Like if you're in a better working situation, odds are you're going to work better and you're going to see more output in your work. And I feel like that's what we're seeing from Derek Shelton. And going back to the ejection thing too, I love the Brian Reynolds side of it, how it took all of one pitch this year for him to already be barking at an umpire on opening day. And then Derek Shelton, he's notorious for that. He sticks up for his guys. And I think that's a contagious thing that's going to go up and down that clubhouse, especially some of these younger guys keep coming up as well.
Yeah, I think I saw Graves point out on social media that this was probably earlier than he would have jumped out and done that in previous seasons. Like she felt it kind of reflected a change in mentality for him, you know, where it's more important now, right now. And I can see that. And I think maybe that's coming across to fans too. There does seem to be a different intent. There does seem to be a willingness to pinch hit. There does seem to be a willingness to mix and match. He's used all of his players and he's used them wisely, I think.
Yeah. And let's not forget about the bullpen being a little short on key people and key situations.
Right.
And he's navigated that really well too early. Again, you know, concerns about a whole year of managing, you know, outings and usage, but so far, I mean, what could you possibly complain about?
Yeah. Hey, we got to take a quick break, but before we do, Dave White wants to know, Ethan, why you didn't take him to Pittsburgh with you and left him in Georgia.
You could have hopped on the plane, man. There were plenty of empty seats. There's plenty of empty seats on the way here.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come right back. We're going to start talking about Mitch Keller, because how could you not?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
At DK Pittsburgh Sports, we take pride in coverage that connects our city's fans to their favorite teams. Now, that connection's stronger than ever. Introducing our all-new state-of-the-art app. Find expert inside reporting and original podcasts. Check live box scores. Track the latest stats. Chat it up with our community of thousands of fans, all in one place. The new app from DK Pittsburgh Sports. Coverage that connects.
All right, welcome back to the Pirates Fan Forum here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. I'm going to ignore some of the comments about PNC Park being flooded that I see in the chat, because I don't believe the field itself is flooded unless I've missed that. So I don't think anybody cares if the Riverwalk's underwater. They'll play. It just means O'Neill can pop one up and hit the river. That's all.
It just means it's going to suck a little bit for people to get to the ballpark. But other than that.
Ethan's butt might be a little wet. He's sitting all the way out in center field. So we'll see what happens there. But Mitch Keller talking about butts being wet. Hasn't really come out looking like the leader of the staff, has he? Jim, last year we talked about the cutter and the reliance on the cutter and pulling up on that cutter almost to the sacrifice of the four seam or even the sinker. He wants it to be his primary fastball, but the problem is it's not as fast and he can't place it as well. He's throwing meatballs. He did it last year towards the end. He's doing it this year towards the beginning. Somebody grab this kid by the shoulders and shake him and please tell him to stop throwing the freaking cutter as a feature pitch. Use it as an accent pitch. And I think if he just switches that in the two seam, I think we're right back to normal old Mitch Keller. And I truly mean that. Ethan, I'll let you start. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's really going again, and I said it the term already, if it's not broke, don't fix it. You saw last year that it got you out of the hole that you were in whenever the first couple years that we saw Mitch Keller, and he was the worst pitcher in Major League Baseball and all this stuff, and he used the sinker to get out of that hole, and he used the cutter as an accent pitch. He used it as a hit-to-contact pitch and let his defense work behind him. The two-seamer, I think, is just a better pitch for him. So why not use your better pitches, especially now that, to add to a whole nother layer of this, the team is paying you to be the best pitcher on the staff. They are showing a willingness to go out and give you this a contract extension to use your best stuff and have your best performance. So far, it's clear the cutter is not your best performance, Mitch. It's not. It's not going to give you the best results as a primary pitch. Not saying that it can't become a pitch that he can use later on and continue to work on it. Just right now, it doesn't look all that great, and the results show it in the box score and pretty much everywhere else.
Yeah, it's getting crushed, Jim, and he's leaving meatballs in there. His heat map for his two-seamers is insane. It's just a giant red spot right in the heart of the strike zone. You're going to get lit up like a downtown Christmas tree, no matter who you are, no matter what else you throw. But this pitch doesn't play off his secondary stuff either. That's now another problem.
And I think what you saw to your point, Gary, is in that second start, where as that game went on, he did start to just try to rely on his fastball more, and things settled down for him. He was actually about to put in a 6-inning, 3-earned run type performance until that last little bit got away from him. He couldn't get whoever out. Who was that dude? He had 3 doubles, and everything he threw him, the guy hit.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. I know what you mean, though. Yeah.
But to your point, he started to rely on that. The other factor right now with Mitch Keller is, you know, for a guy that has a lot of things to work with, nothing right now is incredibly sharp. So he's just, you know, he's scrambling a little bit with touch control. Velocity has looked a little better, so I don't think that's as big of a concern as it was, but it's down a little bit here and there. So you add all those things together, and what you get is two rough starts. Yeah. So
I want to make one point about the velocity before you continue. Just the velocity, I think a lot of people are looking at the averages from last year. You're looking at an average of his entire 2023. Versus the averages from 11 innings this year. Just keep that in mind when we compare those averages and we act like we know it's down. I don't think we know that. I think over the course of a season, then you can compare them directly. And right. Then if they're down by a mile per hour, you can go, oh, okay. But I don't think that's what's going to happen. Because I think when he gets ramped up, he'll throw harder. And, you know... It starts to just change as the season goes on. Go ahead, Jim. Sorry.
No, I just look. Keller has got more scrutiny on him now. He's been paid money in Pittsburgh. Pirate fans are going to expect more. I don't know if maybe he feels a little bit of that weight to that. He just needs to settle down, start locating better, first of all. I mean, like, no matter what pitch you're going to throw, you can't be catching the plate as much as he's been doing. So, am I worried about Mitch Keller? I don't know that I'm worried. I would just say that he's got the ability. He just needs to get focused on the kind of pitches that make him the kind of pitcher that he is.
I mean, we're seeing Tommy John still explode all over the league. Yuri Perez, they just announced for Miami, is going to have TJ now.
Yeah.
And that's disappointing because they really, everything I read, they thought he was going to come back this year and be okay. Yep. Obviously, we've got a guy on our back burner, even though I hear he's throwing, but Carmen Majinski, you know, you hear that forearm tightness. It's scary, you know, and it could easily turn into that. I have a theory about Mitch, and it's the only thing that makes any sense to me, because the cutter has been an ineffective pitch for him for a long time. But it's less taxing on his elbow than throwing a ton of sweepers and throwing that sinker. You know, it's not a high RPM pitch. And we also talked about these guys maybe needing to learn to not pitch max effort all the time.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's maybe indicative of what we're seeing. We're trying to get away with cleaner stuff that takes a little bit less spin and knocking some of the velocity back unless you absolutely need it. And Ethan, it's as good a theory as any. I don't know. You explained to me why a guy would purposefully pick a pitch that doesn't work out of the six he offers.
Well, unless one of the coaches is telling him to do it, that would be the only other explanation. And I don't think that's the case either. And I mean,
they preached the two seam to pull him out of the sewer last time.
Yeah. And I wouldn't see why that would change, especially after he gets paid and how he played last year. Why would you change anything? So if this is truly his decision, I think that is something, again, where you really have to sit him down and say, hey, man, we know like it's not as taxing on your elbow, but we also need the best version of you to win now, which all offseason is what we heard. They want to win. That's what they want to do. They've come out the gates winning despite Mitch having two bad starts. Imagine what happens imagine what happens when he comes out and actually just does what Mitch does with the bullpen that we praise so much. I just think it works out for him, but I really don't know. I mean, Gary, I agree with you. I don't know what other explanation there really is. And if somebody in the chat could tell us, that'd be possibly great too.
I mean, Miles Altman did bring up a point in the chat. He said, you know, is he missing delay? Or it looks like he could be missing delay. Could be some familiarity there that might help, but I don't think Henry Davis can help Mitch locate all that much better. You know, a lot of it's got to come from Mitch. Delay could help in that area with some things about how he's calling a game, but this is upstairs with Mitch. Mitch needs to figure some things out.
And the funny thing is, man, hasn't it always been like that's the struggle there? It's always feels like it's been an upstairs situation. The only other thing I can say about Mitch is that I think we in Pittsburgh, we see that contract, it's record setting for Pittsburgh as far as like signing a pitcher goes, and we don't see them do this. Usually this is a guy they would end up trading next year. So to see them extend him 5 years, $77 million, it sounds gigantic. But in comparison to the league, man, that's a third or fourth starter. And I think at the end of the day, that's what Mitch is.
And
that's okay.
Whatever, like Pirate fans are funny because of, you know, what we've had to deal with here for so long with the money being spent. But it really does help to get, like, educated about how the finances in baseball work and the going rates for guys. So, I mean, if he's a one on certain nights because he's pitching great, great. If he's a three on another night, it's still the going rate for a guy. Like, you know, I think people almost resent players when the Pirates actually do spend money and then they're not
superstar. Well, because they're immediately not good enough, right? Yeah, like,
right. Yeah, it's a funny thing. Like,
it's funny because all the guys that they've signed are the same type of guy, right? They're Brian Hayes, they're Brian Reynolds, and obviously Mitch Keller. They all have some things in common. They all expressed an interest in wanting to stay here, right? They're all, you know, covered in enough warts that they're not going to get a gigantic payday someplace, most likely. Mm-hmm. So they're okay accepting whatever Pittsburgh will pay. And, you know, they like doing it together. They're happy here. That's really the point that those three bring to the table. They're all capable of being an all-star here and there. I don't think any of them are going to be an all-star for five straight years. They're all capable of throwing out an MVP / Cy Young season here and there, but they're not going to be in it every year. And all three of them probably aren't going to carry their team on their own. But they're all good pieces, important pieces to keep. It's the kind of guys that a team like this should lock up. And then you hope that you bring up that superstar power from your system before it costs what superstar power costs.
Right. And you mentioned about the Tommy John stuff going around the league. I mean, would you rather have DeGrom right now? You know, anything like that where, look, availability, and Mitch has at least shown that he's been able to stay healthy and have availability. Man, you pay for that in Major League Baseball. You just do. And we're seeing so many guys teams get tied up with contracts, and guys can't pitch. They can't pitch. You know, they're hurt. So I would say whatever you get out of Mitch Keller, as long as it doesn't revert to the terrible Mitch Keller, if he's healthy and he's providing 1 through 3 to 4 spots in the rotation, you're still getting your money's worth out of that.
Hey, look, Dave White's giving us live updates from the game. Buccos are on the board first. Thanks, Dave. Keep doing that because I can't watch and do this at the same time. So appreciate it. I'll tell you what, guys, I'm going to throw us out of order a little bit. I want to do Call Your Shot now, before we take our second break, okay? Because sure. I think we've got a good one here. All right, Call Your Shot is brought to you by our good friends over at shopyinz.com. Order up merch for our show or just shop through all the great Yinzer gear Taylor and the crew have for sale over there. They're unique, fun, and unmistakably Pittsburgh. shopyinz.com. Yes, Jim is pointing at the logo. Really cool site there. Go check it out. And JSpin80 is our Call Your Shot this week, and he sent in a video because he's a bold, brave fella, and I'm going to go ahead and play it for you.
Morning, gents. Quite a hot take for you on a Monday. I don't even know when your next show is. I just pop in when I can. But use this as you will, or maybe not at all. Great series to start the year. Easily the best sporting events of 2024 thus far. Got to watch my bracket go down in flames, and then the Buccos help boost my spirits again. So that's all I'm hoping for this year. And my official prediction is 500, 81 and 81. and that the Pirates going to keep me interested all season long. And that's all I ask for. So maybe a hot take piece here is that Bailey Falter is not long for this world. I think that Quinn Priester is next man up. And obviously, you know, excited about his first start of the year. Let's just see if, you know, the mental side of the game is there for him. I think that's the only thing really holding this kid back. So, yeah, that's my hot take, is that Quinn Priester will be in Pittsburgh. Let's call it May 1st. Have a good one, guys.
All right. So Jay coming in hot with Quinn Priester coming up May 1st. That's not the guy everybody else keeps talking about, right? That said, they do have him on schedule with Bailey Falter. So they are on the same day. You know, Quinn's going in AAA when Bailey Falter's going and you know, up here, at least until the Ranzalays screw things up for everybody, right?
Yeah.
But that could make some sense. He had a really good first start, and I don't think he had a poor spring. He had a couple bad innings in spring, but I don't think he had a poor spring. Quinn Priester is just as capable as anybody else of getting the call here. I just don't get the impression that they're ready to make a decision on Bailey Falter yet for whatever reason. And Jim, I can't understand it. I think they do have legitimately at least more interesting options like Quinn Priester. Is it really just that big of a fear of losing depth? And if so, why trade Brubaker?
They like Bailey Falter for some reason. Every once out of every five starts, he looks like he's something. And they just keep going back to liking that. I don't know. To me, it seems like they're biding their time. I don't know why exactly. I don't know that Quinn Priester has a whole heck of a lot to learn anymore. He's just going to eventually have to show that he can get over the hump in the major leagues. I don't know, man. Maybe, you know, they might be buying some time with Rowanzi here. So there's some factors at play. But I don't know how much longer you want to keep Quinn Priester down there.
True. Ethan, I mean, what do you think? Quinn Priester's been exciting, but and you got Ortiz looking okay too. And maybe he looks so okay that you almost don't want to move him again. And Rowanzi looks like he figures something out and then it falls off a cliff. What do you think it's going to take for Priester to get a shot up here?
Well, I'll start it with this about how you said there's definitely some more intriguing options outside of Bailey Falter, Priester being one. And I would ask both of you, would you have rather seen Bailey Falter give up five runs in the first inning at a grand slam to Jazz, or Rowanzi do that, or Luis Ortiz do that, or Quinn Priester do that? I mean, obviously we would rather see none of them do it, but at least I think, and Jim, I think you made a great point. How much is there really for Quinn to learn at AAA anymore? I don't think there really is. And I've even went as far to say that I think Quinn Priester could really follow a similar trajectory to Mitch Keller. I think it's going to take him a bit to figure it out and get over the hump in this league. But you can't figure out if he's going to get over this hump in this league if he's in Indianapolis. That's just not something you can do. And a guy in Bailey Falter, I always make the joke that they struggled to find a left-handed pitcher under 30 that they can keep for a long time. And that's the only reason he's here, as they're just hoping that they finally find a lefty under 30 before Solometto gets here. But I don't see why else Falter's here. I don't see what else they need to see from him, especially seeing as what he's done in Pittsburgh, not even what he's done elsewhere. And I would just rather see a guy like Quinn Priester or move Luis Ortiz back into the rotation. And yeah, we're not even mentioning the other guy that everybody keeps talking about, because we don't need to, because these are also real options that the Pirates could throw in there outside of Bailey Falter.
I will say with Ortiz, I don't want to mess with something that is looking decent right now. Mm-hmm. And like, there's no rush for me on the Ortiz side. I think he's responded pretty well, both in performance and, hey, keeping him hungry, which seems like is a thing with him, isn't a bad thing. So I wouldn't reward someone like that right away and be like, oh, back in the rotation. Good job, buddy.
Right. I'd agree. So, there's no shame in being a good reliever too. I mean, like, it isn't like we aren't going to need them, you know? Right. So I'm happy if Rowanzi and Ortiz both turn into contributors back there, and you know, and it allows them to stick around for a while. They've got so many guys with options in that bullpen. I think that's probably the understated beauty of the bullpen construction, is how many guys they have with options. They have so many, they can afford to be okay having one who doesn't. Mm-hmm, you know, yeah. I think right now you have Chapman and Contreras are probably the only two that don't.
Yeah.
You have a lot of wiggle room to play around there. Right. Baraki. You know, you have a lot of wiggle room to play around there, though, like for resting guys even, and or giving guys extended time off, like, or even just performance related call-ups and switcheroos you can do. We got like Holderman on the way back soon. I don't know who's going to go. I don't even know who I would pick.
There's a real chance it's Ryder Ryan, and that pitch that he's been throwing is nasty. And cool. He might go.
Stuff looks crazy. Hunter Stratton's another one that, like, what do you, I mean, he's been lights out. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, great decisions to have to make, right?
Yeah. That's the position you want to be in as a GM, right? I mean, that they're making it that difficult for you. Ryder Ryan, they've really used him a lot too. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's part of the equation where they're figuring like he might not be there very long. We're going to ride him as much as we can. He's been effective. So
I thought it was really interesting that Derek Shelton directly said the reason they chose Ryder Ryan out of some of their other options was because Holderman was hurt. They wanted somebody that could come in and get those ground balls. So
yeah,
I think like it's pretty cool the way that they've identified not only the different talents that some of these guys have, but the different situations they can handle. I saw them warming up Aroldis Chapman in the seventh inning the other day. Like, I think they might have even done it just to scare the other team, because they ended up going with Josh Fleming. it's crazy games they can play now.
Yeah, it's nice having these options. I will say, when it does get interesting, is, you know, how long do you let Falter do this? How long do they let Rowanzi try to figure things out when you need to start making sure you're winning ball games?
I don't know, but right now we got to take a quick break, and before we do, I got to tell everybody in the bottom of the first, it's 4-0 Pirates. So let's hope that they're going to come home with a 1-loss record for opening day.
God, I think that would be nice.
Pretty exciting. Let's go ahead and take that quick break. Come right back. We're going to pick up talking about some more Buccos.
At DK Pittsburgh Sports, we take pride in coverage that connects our city's fans to their favorite teams. Now, that connection's stronger than ever. Introducing our all-new state-of-the-art app. Find expert inside reporting and original podcasts. Check live box scores. Track the latest stats. Chat it up with our community of thousands of fans, all in one place. The new app from DK Pittsburgh Sports. Coverage that connects.
We're back to the Pirates fan forum here on DK Pittsburgh Sports, and Jim has something he must say immediately.
No, I was just going to say, we might have to start doing these, you know, live shows during games if this is going to be the result. That's all I'm saying.
Absolutely. Why not? I mean, it's really hard to not try to live broadcast them, though, and you can get yourself in some trouble for that if you have some kind of noticeability out here on YouTube like we have become.
Is it also a coincidence, Gary, that I show up in Pittsburgh and all of a sudden 4 runs in the top of the first inning?
Well, I would buy into it if you were in Washington.
Yeah.
But
I have to be on site.
Let's talk about the offense, because it has been wild and wonderful so far, Jim. It really has. It's been fun to watch. 1 through 9, no matter what order that Derek Shelton seems to put them in, they play off of each other. They're bunting, they're running, they're situationally hitting, they're making contact more often than not. They're milking pitchers of pitches. They had caused their opponents to throw 200 pitches 3 games in a row. That's insane. And here's my hot take from it, Jim. This is everything we hated about the Andy Haynes offense executed the way he wants it executed, by probably better hitters. have we been too hard on him? Because he, much like Derek Shelton, had not enough to work with, or did it take him having a real regular off season with these guys, like they claimed, to really get in the lab and start working on some of the things they wanted to work on? Because it's a lot of returning players too.
Yeah. I think obviously if you're not going to acknowledge for him that he's got something better to work with, that's kind of disingenuous, right? If you're going to make that argument with Shelton. So yeah. You know, it's interesting. When this type of approach works, boy, does it look good. Now, we saw when they did drop their first game that it can look bad too, right? I mean, you really have to execute it, and guys really have to be, you know, on that plan of executing it, because you get complacent up there, you start taking too many pitches. They got caught looking a lot late in that first loss. Things did not look great. I will say, like, and I know some people are saying, well, hey, you know, they're not hitting home runs yet. Well, let's relax. Okay. They've had five straight left-handed starters. That really negates some of the power in this lineup. So the fact that they were still able to go 5-1 in that, or 5-0 in that stretch with the lefties is a really good sign. I mean, they're working counts, seeing pitches, getting pitchers' pitch counts up, getting into bullpens. I mean, those are the things you need to do if you don't have just an absolute, you know, bludgeoning offense like the Dodgers or Braves do.
And Ethan, I think obviously, you know, Jim was kind enough to not go ahead and tell me the sample size is too small. He would have been dead right. But that usually would have been his first go-to. So I'm glad he didn't this time. It is true, though. We're going to have to watch this play out. And I think something that I think we saw with the Andy Haynes offense last year, it started out hot then, too. And then all of a sudden, the rest of the league started going, oh, well, in that case, we're just going to start out 0-2. So yeah. What I've liked that I've seen early on in the season is it's been a little hybrid of that. I've seen a lot of guys come up and take first and second pitch hacks and then start working the count. And I think that makes the whole system a lot more effective. I mean, what do you think you're seeing so far?
Yeah, I mean, and you look at the approach that they've had. Now, I will say this too. I hope that they don't live and die by two out hits the entire year. That's just hopefully something I hope they don't live by, because that's just not sustainable whatsoever. Right. And you mentioned jokingly the sample size. You could also mention, if you want to, the pitching they faced. They haven't exactly faced the world beater pitchers that we all expect. I mean, Jesus Luzardo is really the only one that's made them look exponentially silly. And then the bullpens they faced have also not been the greatest bullpens either. Not saying they're bad bullpens, but they're not the greatest either. So, yeah, I think it's going to take time to see it work out. But I agree with you too, Gary. It's been more of a hybrid this year. It's not, oh, yeah, we're just going to sit like this, bat on shoulder, wait until the count's 0-2, and then try to swing at stuff. Yeah, you have guys like Davis go up there and swing right away, cruise right away. Hayes, a lot of Hayes's extra base hits have come early in the count thus far this year.
Right.
So if it's something that they want to keep trying to do, I think it also goes back to what we said about Shelton earlier. Does Andy Haynes finally have a lineup where this philosophy can work and players that can make it work as well?
I was just going to say the big thing that Ethan just brought up, and I want to make sure people remember, is this kind of two-strike, two-out hitting is just simply not sustainable. So they've got to make sure they're doing some of these other things, and let's get the long ball back involved because you need it in today's game. But, yeah, it's just simply not sustainable. There's no – you can do that for short stretches, and you might even be able to, you know, even get a half of season out of it being over, but this is like way over.
Sure. And there's anomalies like that all over the place. Like, I think we're seeing Jared Triolo's BABIP catch up with him a little bit. You know, I don't think that he's acquitted himself well to being a named starter. I don't think we're seeing Jared Triolo play defense the way he wants to. I don't think we're seeing him even take plate appearances the way I think he'd like
Definitely.
In many ways, I thought he looked more polished last year as a hitter than he does this year. So,
well, and I think
some guys have taken steps back, I'd say, you know, again, early on.
Yeah. I think that's the thing too with Triolo. I think like people, and maybe even he needs to be okay with what got him there, right? He doesn't need to be anything more than what Jared Triolo is, which is he's very good at, you know, putting the ball in play. You know, sure, he doesn't have a ton of pop, but he can get on base. He can play good defense. Don't forget about those things. You don't have to be anything more than what got you there in the first place.
Yeah. And I think you are seeing a little bit of pressing, both offensively and defensively. I think the body's almost getting ahead of the brain a little bit. And, you know, he'll reel it in. I think this is why when you call up rookies, no matter what you think of them, you got to know you're in for a month of ups and downs and lessons learned and roller coaster stuff. And what you don't expect is to see a game like Ke'Bryan Hayes had the other day where he just blew up defensively. You don't see that very often, right?
No.
But I don't know. Interesting stuff. The offense is definitely a storyline that I think we need to keep paying attention to. It's going to be interesting to see how it evolves, especially as the league continues to push back. The last thing I really want to talk about today, guys, was Bart for DeLay. Jason DeLay got injured. Fate stepped in and Bart was put on waivers. Pirates were interested in Bart early on in the offseason to begin with in a deal. I personally would prefer they did that instead of Grandal. So I don't mind this at all. But what do you think of the move? Ethan, I know you wrote about it a little bit, so if you want to go ahead and use your head start while Jim and I think, have at it.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at what Joey Bart is. He's a former second overall pick from the 2018 draft, and he's a guy that just never really amounted to that potential. It looked like in 2022, he was finally getting there. His WRC plus, I believe, was a 92 that year. He was a guy that it looked like, okay, the Giants finally have their guy, their everyday catcher after Buster Posey hung him up. And then all of a sudden, kind of like what we saw with a lot of people when Henry was drafted number one overall last year with Endy catching all last year, Patrick Bailey shows up, ironically also a switch hitter, I believe, like Eddie Rodriguez, and he takes over that role. And suddenly you're looking around and Joey Bart doesn't have options. He's not performing well. He's not doing all that great. So the Giants just cut ties with him. And really, the Pirates didn't give up really anything. They gave up a guy that never pitched a professional game for this organization. So maybe it's a change of scenery that'll help a guy like Joey Bart. Hopefully, I think that's the thing that could be big for him. And yeah, I mean, Jason DeLay is injured. You look at Grandal, you never know when he's coming back right now, if he even does with what he's dealing with his foot. So you, and at that point, Ali Sanchez elected free agency. He's not here anymore. Are you bringing up Carter Binns at that point? So I think it's really just a reactionary move to Jason DeLay just being injured. And it's not a terrible one. I mean, I don't think Joey Bart's horrible by any stretch of the imagination. The talent's there. He just has to find a way to tap into it.
Yeah, I'd agree there. And Jim, if nothing else, it's a pedigree upgrade. I mean, like, you can't make the argument that Joey Bart doesn't have a higher pedigree than Jason DeLay. I'm not saying that Jason DeLay has done nothing here and hasn't earned any kind of respect or whatever, but I feel a lot better with Joey Bart as a backup than I do.
Yeah.
Jason DeLay, I mean, at least offensively, I know he can put one over the fence every once in a while. Hitting over 200 as a backup catcher, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think, you know, here's the thing in baseball too, like when you draft a guy that high and he was supposed to be the heir apparent to Buster Posey, and it hasn't, clearly it hasn't worked out. He's never really found his footing. I really do think the best case scenario for a guy like that is a change of scenery, and maybe working with someone else to see if they can't figure out what what has really been holding you back? Have you tried this? Let's try this approach. Let's look at this. Let's get a different set of eyes on this. And he gets to walk away from that pressure, right? Because you know that's part of it. So then you add on to the fact that it creates depth in case there's another injury in the system. You don't want to get to the point where, you know, let's be honest, Henry's had some issues. So like, what do you, if you're down to delay starting every day, then you've got some real problems. I thought it was a really, really smart pickup just in case he's needed at some point, regardless of how much they feel he's going to be used at the major league level.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I saw nothing to hate here. I saw a lot of hate online, though. I didn't get it. Like, I feel like we constantly want this team to, like, upgrade and react. Like, and to me, this is a great reaction. This is the kind of reaction you want to see. Like, we want to win right now. So we have a hole that just cropped up. We're not sitting here. Carter Bins isn't good enough. We're not gonna give Abraham Gutierrez a shot. No. We're gonna go out and get this guy.
Yeah, they're really one injury away of being in trouble at the position. So they had to go out and do something. If that's what's available at catcher, I say sign me up. You know, maybe you can, like Ethan said, tap into some of that. Because he was legit coming out, like legit. So I don't have an issue with it. I think it was a good move.
Yeah, all in all, I do too. So interesting stuff. And then opening day, Friday, hopefully. You know, it looks like there's going to be some snow flurries and probably in the low 40s. Going to be cold. Probably going to be walking around. Might have to cover my wife with deer skins or something. I don't know how to protect her. Make her some mucklucks or something that she can walk around in.
Poor Megan too. She's not exactly a diehard here. So she's
not insulated like I am either. So I mean, like,
yeah,
it's gonna be cold, but we're all gonna be there, right? So
yeah.
What are you looking forward to most, Ethan? This is your first one in a very long time. So
yeah,
what do you think? What are you excited about?
Really just seeing everybody pack it. It's apparently sold out. I mean, now, obviously, I think that'll change a little bit based off of the weather. I don't know if everybody's going to want to brave the cold like I am and like we probably will. But, I mean, I think it's just nice. I mean, especially if the team holds this 5-0 lead that they currently have and come back with one loss, it'll feel a lot like last year when they played the White Sox and had that delayed opening day again where it just kind of feels like, okay, this team started off hot. There's some real stuff to get excited about. And I think it'll be nice for everybody to finally see them in person as well from what we've seen from these first couple games.
Yeah. I mean, Jim, a sellout is a sellout. I think we expected opening day would be.
Right.
I think Ethan, Pittsburgh will go ahead and shock you tomorrow. It will be pretty full despite the cold. But what are you looking forward to, Jim? You go to this all the time. You're probably just looking forward to seeing it through Ben's eyes, but
yeah, you know, that's kind of like, it's funny. I've been going to home openers for a long time into the Three Rivers days. And it's just kind of cool now. It's my son is 7 and he's just now to the point where these things are exciting and dad pulls him out of school for half a day. So that's, you know, pretty cool for him. And just to be able to pass that along to him and have him enjoy these things and maybe hopefully do that someday for his kids. And it's just good to get back to the ballpark despite the weather and enjoy seeing baseball again in person, because you know we're all the types of guys that, you know, we miss it after a while in person. And so I'll be okay with the cold.
That's why it was really nice going down to spring training and getting to see some in-person baseball again, you know.
Right.
I actually find myself less dreaming of opening day because I kind of got a little bit of a taste there, you know, and saw some things and, you know, almost just gave me, it was like a little shot that I needed, And like, now I'm okay getting the opening day a week after it started, you know.
Definitely.
So looking forward to it. I was just thinking about with Ben at his age, like a lot of the components of this baseball team are going to be the ones that he takes with him as these were my players. This was when people are asking on whatever the new social media is in 15 years, who was your favorite player when you started up? Good chance one of this team is his answer. That's pretty freaking cool, man. And it's fun to look at like that.
It is. And it's funny because just the other day we're watching a game and he is getting into it because he looks up, he looks at Henry Davis. He goes, why doesn't Henry have batting gloves on? And so he's starting to see like things that are different in the game and he doesn't know why. And, you know, I explained to him that he's one of the few guys anymore that just doesn't like the feel of it, you know, and that's why you'll see him reach down and grab some dirt and all that stuff. And these are the guys that he'll remember as we remember guys when we were starting to be 8, 10, 12 years old and the players that were there. And maybe hopefully it's a good time for him to really start getting into it. I hope so.
Well, the runs are starting to go in the other direction now. It's 5-1, so I think we're probably going to have to end the show before it gets worse and we get blamed for it. But
and let me go back to one thing that we were talking about with maybe somebody like Triolo pressing whatever. What I would tell people is early in the season, young guys, be patient. Some of these guys are probably pressing a little bit. I think Henry's pressed a little bit at the plate. Triolo has pressed. Cruz isn't going to be immune to that. Cruz doesn't see any pitches. He's already getting treated like he is, you know, Freddie Freeman.
And that is one concern I have with them putting him so low in the lineup. There is nobody behind him that's scary. I'm not saying that there's no competency behind him, because there is. They're good hitters, but
you'd always want to face who's ever behind him, no matter what.
Michael A. Taylor right now, I think he's got his OPS is up over 1,000. It was already up over 1,000 before the game, and he doubled already in this one. So it's probably like 1-1, you know, something like that.
Right.
Dude's crazy. I don't care. He could do that into like July and ain't nobody going to pitch to O'Neill Cruz, you know, because they're afraid of Michael Taylor.
Yeah.
So there has to be something that comes along there. And I don't know what the answer is, but they need to protect him a little bit better than they are, I think, so that he sees some pitches, because it is already evident. Nobody wants to let him hit anything.
It's kind of crazy. You know, that is usually reserved for certain dudes, and they are giving him some respect up there. And that's tough on a young hitter, man, because you're not seeing anything. You're not seeing anything good to hit. Every chance they have to bring in a lefty later in a game, you're going to see that. So, you know, patience. Some of these young guys are figuring it out still.
Yeah, and some of the old guys are figuring it out too, like – Andrew McCutchen is actively in front of you before our very eyes, learning how to adjust to losing bat speed. And I know that you keep hearing the announcers talk about he's still got plenty of bat speed. Yeah, he does, but you're being nice, because the Kutch of 5 years ago does not miss some of these fastballs right in the top part of the zone. So he's not the same Andrew McCutchen. We all knew that. I don't have sour grapes about signing him. I still think he can be a productive player. I just think that eventually we're going to have to embrace the fact that he's not an everyday player, and Derek Shelton's going to have to embrace the fact that he's probably not a cleanup hitter.
Yeah. If anything, right now, you do look at that lineup and you think, like, cleanup hitter, who is that? Is it? It's just going to have to be like a different hand on deck type situation, because, you know, it that needs sorted out a little bit. So,
I think a lot of people assumed it was going to just be Rowdy Telesmo's days. You know, it was the easy choice. You stick him there, you don't really have to worry about his legs much. He just drives in runs. He hits home runs every once in a while. I mean, I wasn't in love with that either. You know, yeah. I like Kutch as a leadoff guy, but Connor Joe did fine there. So, you know, maybe as when you're facing lefties, that's the way you go. But
yeah,
I don't know. Kutch is going to have to find a way to be productive, and I'm not sure you want your cleanup hitter hunting walks.
Yeah, ideally, I mean, look, ideally, you want it to the point where Kutch doesn't have to be as instrumental in what you're hoping to accomplish, and that he's probably being asked to do a lot. But yeah, the bat speed, look, man, he's 37, you know, sure. Like, and these guys are nobody's throwing slower every year. So Kutch, I still think Kutch will be fine. His eye's too good, but we may have seen the start of walking it back a little bit with him.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Ethan, any thoughts on that before we go? Kutch?
I mean, I know you mentioned him as a leadoff hitter, and then we're also mentioning about Cruz and having to like avoid throwing to him in some of these spots. I wouldn't be at all mad if they came out with a lineup one day where Kutch led off with Reynolds at 2, Hayes at 3, and Cruz at 4. Because if Reynolds and Hayes keep doing what they're doing and get on base, you can't avoid O'Neill Cruz. I mean, you can still throw a lefty out there if you want to, but you're going to have to pitch to him in that scenario.
Yeah, Kutch plus, if he's four, then you're backing him up with Henry Davis, Rowdy Tellez, you know, bumpers that can do something. So I just don't like it when it gets down to that 6 or 7 spot, because inevitably that's Alika Williams and that's, you know, Michael Taylor, and that's maybe like your backup catcher here and there. And I just would prefer that he kind of stay up in the top 5. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I think too, like, people get very impatient with lineups and the changing of it, but I think we've already seen in these first, you know, this first week of games where you really do want to try to play to people's strengths and pitching matchups and move guys around. And they don't have a lot of perfect pieces, right? There's holes. So you try to avoid those as best as possible. And so I'm not going to get too upset as the season goes on here that they're really trying to, like, kind of masterfully move that around as they go.
Yeah. I mean, I would say back to O'Neill Cruz one last time, because we talk about, like, you know, where you move him and not seeing pitches. He's only walked twice and he struck out 11 times. It's on him to get those numbers a little bit closer, because if you don't force guys back into the zone or you take your base every time and the rest of this lineup does damage, they will eventually start throwing you something in the hopes of getting it out. So, yeah. I mean, it's on him a little bit too. I just want to make sure that people don't think that we're saying he's just destined to not see a pitch all year. It's not like that. No, it's on him a little too.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be able to adjust and force things at times. And that when you're getting superstar treatment, that's a tough line to learn how to navigate. So,
yeah. So, hey, everybody, great show. Let's go enjoy the game a little bit, huh? It looks like the Bucks are trying to let us. So,
yeah.
And then home opener, if you're around, we'll all be around. Just stop over and see us and say hello. I'm probably just going to be walking around. I don't think I'm going to go up to my super high seats at all. So,
might be a little windy
out in center field.
Might be a little breezy out there.
Might just be. I'll be over by the Build Your Own Nacho Bar for sure. So. All right, Ben, take it away.
Let's go, Bucks!
Yeah, buddy.
See you, everybody. Thanks.